Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Are you ready for this?
This week on your all-out cricket pod blast, I think I smell a stat as we look back on the 2013 county and international season and let the stat out of the bag to reveal this season's real winners. And then we look to see if England managed to trim the stat from their Ashes squad. It's the end of the season stat edition, but keep it under your stat.
Well, listener, we told you it was going to be stat heavy today, but first, maybe a statistical warning to be slightly partridge about it, Ross.
Stat warning! Incoming!
You. So, I was reading the Sunday Times, and normally I don't read newspapers because they just peddle fear. But I read an article by Simon Wilde about England picking left-handers to counter the threat from an erratic seamer. And that erratic seamer, Ross, was Mitchell Johnson, would you believe it?
A bit of Wildean wit.
And I thought to myself, first of all, coming up with a strategy to deal with Mitchell Johnson is a little bit like coming up with a strategy if you're playing Germany at football to deal with Per Mertesacker, isn't it? It seems slightly odd. And also, they're picking substitutes to deal with Per Mertesacker. It's how that all the backup guys left-handed. And Simon Wilde, who's a fantastic journalist, made an elementary mistake, my dear Watson, which is relying on stats that didn't quite make sense. So let this be a warning to you, listener. He says as follows: of the 9 wickets Johnson took in Perth in 2010, only 3 were left-handers. And he's using that to back up the idea that left-handers bat better against Johnson than right-handers. But of the England team that played that game, the 11, only 3 were left-handers. So 33% of his wickets were left-handers, but only 28% of the batsmen were left-handers. QED, he's actually a better bowler against left-handers than right-handers. So this is the danger of stats.
Oh, stat danger.
It's a homily about a statistical anomaly.
Oh, how do you feel now, Wild?
Smackdown. All right, we're also joined here in the pod, as always, by Phil Walker. Phil, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, yeah.
And Joe Harmon. Joe, how are you?
Oh, very well, thank you.
I'd like to start with the front cover news, lads. The latest edition, out recently. When did it come out?
It's out on the 3rd, so 2 days from now. It's just arrived in our offices today, though, so this is hot off the press.
We're very excited about your front cover, I think it's fair to say, aren't we?
Look at Moeen Ali and all his glory.
Moeen Ali
on there.
Bearded to the nines on the front. Who's he there with? Phil, talk us through the front cover and tell us a bit about why you're featuring these guys.
All right, well, first of all, we feature the England top dogs month in, month out, and we felt it was time after a crazy old summer to focus on three up-and-coming players who we think will be playing Test cricket within a year or two's time. Mm-hmm. Now, we picked these three lads probably 6 to 8 weeks ago on the back of decent county seasons, but none of them had actually played for England at the time. And now one of them, Gary Balance, who we discussed in the pod a couple of weeks ago, he's in the Ashes squad. We've interviewed him. He's on the front cover along with the inestimable Moeen Ali.
Well, can I ask you this? Did you choose these guys then before the announcements?
That's
incredible. Oh, yeah. You looked into the future. Yeah. You soothsayers.
We know what's going on. Don't worry about that.
So witches,
we've got Moeen and his glorious beard in the middle. We've got Gary on the right-hand side of the front cover. And interestingly, we have England's newest Australian-born patriot, Mr. Samuel Robson, who my colleague Joe interviewed. It's an interesting one, this.
Joe, tell us a little bit about old Robbo.
Well, it's been an interesting one. It's kind of been an interesting subplot to the Ashes summer that whilst Australia's batsmen have been struggling, there's been an Australian-born batsman batting methodically with patience and just racking up runs. There's been this reporting in the press of this tug of war between Australia and England, but Robson stayed more or less silent on this and tried to dodge the question. In this interview, he does confirm that obviously he's in the performance squad, and he says England's where it's at for him and has been for some time. I did say, why didn't you just tell us this and stop all the kind of speculation over the summer? And he said, quite reasonably, I've had a year and a half of good county cricket. I don't want to come forward and say I'm now playing for England, because he thought he was so far off that he wasn't going to say that.
What accent's he got?
It's quite Aussie.
It's quite Aussie. It's quite Aussie. Oh, well, you know, accents, they're not important.
And, of course, Gary Balance's is pretty Zimbabwean. Yes. Via Harrow, it's a peculiar pathway to have got him into this Ashes squad. Zimbabwean farm via Harrow up to Derby, further north to Yorkshire, and now on the plane.
Is a mongrel, Moeen Ali, though, of the Shires, as we learned in the last episode. So a true Worcestershire man, Ross. You must appreciate his selection for the England Performance
Squad. I'm very excited. I see this pod blast with All Out Cricket very much as a pressure group for England fringe players.
A splinter group.
We're trying to raise awareness.
Moeen's in the Performance Squad now. We got Carberry in.
That's right, Carberry Corner.
Not sure how well that worked out. We'll discuss as we discuss the England squad later on. Looking at the performance squad, any surprises, guys? Anyone's of particular interest as we look at that performance squad? Mark Wood, I don't know who he is.
Durham Seam, I have to say, I haven't seen a lot of him myself, but he's taken a lot of wickets in the matches that he's played. It's interesting with his performance squad. In the past, it's been England's second string out there. They haven't really gone that way. They've gone young players. So players like Taylor, Wokes, Borthwick perhaps aren't there. And you've got more youngsters who are some way from playing for England, but they think further down the line they're exciting. So someone like Tymal Mills, who's barely played for Essex this year really, but had a very exciting performance against England whilst playing for Essex, gets on the plane as a bit of a punt really. Let's have a bit more of a look at him. And they know what Wokes and Taylor can do. What's really the point of having them there? And just,
is Kerrigan in it? What have they done with him?
Kerrigan's there.
I'm interested, is that the distinction between a performance squad and the Lions squad? Is the Lions squad the second 11 and the performance squad something else?
I think more and more so. And there is a Lions tour to Sri Lanka in February next year, I think it is.
Yeah.
And that will be, I think, a 15-man squad of, if anyone got injured in the England side, these would be the next guys to step in.
Yeah.
Performance squad's slightly different. Although, obviously, he still has got players there, like Kerrigan, who might come into the mix if there's an injury.
Well, Moeen Ali's forced his way in with 1,420 runs in first-class cricket this year.
Stat attack.
In the second division. Stat attack. That's thank you, good. Ross. Yeah. So, well done, Moeen. We'll be doing the runners and riders in terms of the stats more closely. But second division runs don't count against you. Carberry's in there as well. Second division runs. What do you think of the selection of Carberry for the main England squad?
Let's talk England squad.
I think it's a good one. And I think it's a good populist call as well. Not that I'm saying they did it for those reasons, but I think there'll be a lot of happy people, you know, in the Shires having seen him called up. Not least himself, because he'd have been the last person who would have expected this. He'd written off his chances. I felt that they were always going to take a reserve opener. And when we were talking about it in the office, I thought they may have gone to Compton, although I think he's probably burnt his bridges, to be honest.
Yeah,
but so Carberry, but a lot of runs over a period of time in regards to Carberry over the last few years. I don't think he's a lesser player this year than he was 2 years ago. He's improved across the board over the last 2 or 3 years. And they need to take a reserve opener because apart from the obvious number six issue, which we can come to, the other question mark is Joey Root, who's clearly a fine player, but never played in Australia before. He's still finding his feet. If anyone breaks a finger up top, they're not going to want to move Trott up to open. Or if Root is out of form, ergo, Carberry gets picked. And it's an interesting one, and it's a good one. I'm pleased to see it. I was pleased with the squad across the board, apart from the Onion situation.
All right, well, Absolutely. We're going to have to talk about Onion. 75 wickets this season in first-class cricket. My stats just keep coming.
Gleaming stats.
Ross, tell me about Onions.
Onions is a fantastic player. He's the one player you think, when you look at the cover for each position, bowling position, I'd say. He would be the backup for James Anderson. He's a get-out-and-bowler. He's not necessarily a big bowler, but he's artful. He's taken wickets for fun over the last couple of seasons. In fact, throughout the whole of his career in the English domestic leagues, and I think it's a real shame. It doesn't reward his great work for that, and I think he's the one person that is most likely to be bitterly disappointed. I think, as he's already tweeted, in fact.
Yeah, he's absolutely gutted.
I don't know if it's a coincidence that Compton and Onions are not in the team, or if there is something to that in regards to their reaction over the summer to not having played. Compton was quite open about his disappointment, and he questioned the logic behind it. And Onions has made the odd noise as well. And I think they're both 30-odd as well. They've both had a career already, a fruitful county career. It's almost as if the two of them, they don't have the energy to play the game anymore, to tread that line, you know. And in response, maybe Flower and others may have looked elsewhere as a consequence of that.
Yeah. Over 30 and bitter. That's what's
like us all, my friend.
With Compton, though, I mean, he did make those comments when he got dropped, but they weren't especially strong. He said he was disappointed and he thought he'd done enough, which isn't... He didn't come out and slag off the selectors unduly. He also was, it should be said, one of the very first to tweet when Joe Root got his century at Lords to congratulate him. And he's handled himself very impressively in that sense. And he's gone away and scored runs immediately after being dropped. So I think he's a bit unlucky. I wouldn't have taken him, but I think he's a bit unlucky.
So you don't think there's anything in it?
I think there might be. But if that is the case, I think that's unfair on him, because actually I think he's handled himself pretty well. I just wouldn't. I think...
Then there is the element, of course, we don't know what's said behind closed doors as well.
Yeah, could be some awful stuff.
Well, there is a feeling, and this is just a feeling, and I've read this in reports as well, that they think perhaps Carberry is more of a... suits that team dynamic better than Carberry, and on a long six week 2 month tour, then Carberry might be a better tourist, and also I would say a more versatile batsman. Compton knows one way to play, and it's very effective at county level, and it's proven to be quite effective at test level. But I think they think Carberry could come out and actually, if there's runs to be had on fast outfields, quick bouncy pitches, then Carberry's not going to necessarily hold back in the way that Compton might.
If we're talking about Compton and we're talking about onions, I feel another topic coming on, which is connected. So, listener, perhaps a quick Partridge-like jingle, and then back into the meat of the business.
Stat attack.
Okay, the number six position. Here we are. We've all gone slightly Partridge again. Gary Blance has been chosen for this squad. What do you make of that?
I'm delighted that he's in there. I think he's a really interesting player who scores runs in all forms, on all grounds, come rain or shine. He's a straightforward kind of fella. He's 23, I think. He's got an interesting backstory, which you'll read about in the upcoming magazine.
Yes.
And I think it was an irresistible choice. That said, they could have played it safe, and they haven't. They've gone for that for balance. And for my money, I think he starts as favourite to take that number six spot at Brisbane.
Really? Yeah. Over Bairstow?
I think so.
1,363 runs in first-class cricket, Gary Blance last year.
Stat attack.
Don't have Bairstow's figures, unfortunately. That's probably a failing on my part. But what do you make of Blance over Bairstow? That's a cool,
interesting
one.
Well, they had, as soon as the score was picked, they had their first playoff of what might be a few, because they had Yorkshire's last championship game. They were batting together. Blance ends up getting twin tons, and Bairstow, what, a couple of 20s?
Mm.
Not many.
Yeah. And it's interesting. An absolute stinker as well.
Yeah, I saw that.
Was he keeping wicket?
He was.
He keeps every time he goes back to Yorkshire. And when I interviewed Bairstow, he was a bit prickly about the keeping issue. And he said, I absolutely want to keep. I want to take over from Pryor when the moment comes. Yeah. And he's very keen to push the whole keeping thing.
I'd like to come back to keepers in a little while, because I want to talk about Stephen Davies. And at some point, I'd like to consider the various other options. And Butler also travelling from Somerset as well. But just focusing on England at the moment, is there anything else about this squad that's of maybe concern to anybody around the table?
Well, it's not a concern as such. They are interestingly obsessed with size and mass and you know, it's kind of like the British Lions, you know, who are touching down in Sydney. And one of them, of course, is Ben Stokes. Now, Ben Stokes, I spoke to Will Smith, who's just moved to Hampshire. He's been at Durham for a few years. And I spoke to him this morning, and he said, he won't thank me for saying this, but he said he has the potential to be the best all-rounder ever.
That's a great...
The best ever.
That's a great...
I'd like to...
Heard it here first.
Can I put a bomb
clearly,
on the pressure group?
Clearly, he's slightly hungover from Durham's great win. He's still toasting the whole season, Will, in his head. Yeah. And he's not normally given to hyperbole. He also acknowledged how wild a statement it was.
Yeah.
That said, we have got a serious player on our hands here. Yeah. And the interesting... The really audacious thing for England to do would be to play him at six... I'm not sure if he's properly cut out for test level yet as a number six. But the other option is to throw the number six to Pryor and say, listen, this is your time now. We're going to give you a dozen test matches, go and bat six and go and get three or four hundreds. And then Stokes comes in as a gun number seven. Then you've got your five bowlers. then we're just dreaming of Flint off and Botham and all the rest of it.
I think Stokes is in the mix. I know Jeff Miller came out six or seven, but to play in that side.
Yeah.
Miller came out and said it's good for these guys to get some experience on tours. England don't really do that. They don't pick someone to come along and just be a passenger and say, oh, isn't this nice as an Ashes tour? I think if Stokes is there, he's very much in the mix. And we've said perhaps balance has the edge over Bairstow. To be honest, I don't think there really is a particular favourite at this moment. I think there'll be, two, three warm-up games before the first test?
Yeah.
I think a lot is going to ride on those. I think balance and Bairstow go in as even favourites with Stokes as a wild card. If he goes out there and smashes a runnable century and takes a few wickets, then suddenly it's going to be hard not to play him.
Look, overstatement being the new understatement, I think he definitely will become the best player ever. But I like Ben Stokes a lot. I think he's got a great opportunity. I think also there could be a certain amount of kidology about who, you know, they know each other quite well now, England and Australia, these teams. Great to have a player up your sleeve who they haven't seen so much of, who might come into the Test arena and do something.
I saw him in the one days.
They saw him in the one days.
I mean, he got better as he bowled. He took 44 wickets at 26 last year, so he can bowl, albeit up in Durham. He's got a batting average of 31, but he doesn't bat that high up the order. Mm. These are stats that both of them would have been proud of.
Yeah, and in regard to the batting as well, I don't think he's had the best of seasons this year, but he was batting at 5 2 or 3 years ago and scoring fourth day hundreds against good attacks. He's already proved that he can score first class runs from number five. You know, he doesn't slip in there and give it a whack from number seven. He's batted top order for 2 or 3 years. He's only, again, 20, 22, 23, I think. And it's fascinating to see how they're going to fit him in. He will play and he'll play a lot of games.
If he was Australian, he'd be in the Australian team, wouldn't he?
Yeah, you'd have thought so.
I think the exciting thing, I mentioned this to Al earlier, is that I think if everyone was to mention who they think is going to fill that last bowling spot and the last batting spot, I think it's a possibility we'd all choose different combinations.
Yeah,
I would go for Rankin and Balance, but I don't know whether anyone else would.
Is it Balance or is it Balance?
I think we'll go with Balance.
I like it.
Sounds a bit like Jack Palance.
It's a little more flamboyant, isn't it? And we're nothing if not flamboyant here on the Pop Blast. Well, England go out on tour very soon. But back in Blighty, a whole wonderful sun-drenched season was enjoyed by the usual culprits. In the next half of the show, we'll be examining the current victors, the champions, that is Durham, managed to spit that one out in the end. And we'll be looking at perennial losers, Surrey, the big money boys. Okay.
The 2013 season gave birth to two champions. Who were they, Al? Don't sing.
That's enough of that singing malarkey, Ross. Okay, let's start with the champions, Durham. And what I want to know, Joe, is how did Durham do it?
Well, if you come to me because I tipped them for relegation, is this again?
I've completely forgotten. But
it got pointed out to me on Twitter following the show as well. Obviously, I'm... what a fantastic achievement from... It wasn't only me that thought they would have been the title.
I feel like this is mealy mouth.
Yeah, gritted teeth. No, go on, Joe.
But it's been a real team effort. No one has scored a huge amount of runs.
Yeah.
Putting Borthwick up to three proved a bit of a masterstroke.
Yeah.
I'd say it's probably done out of necessity rather than design in that their top order was struggling. But he did such a great job at three. Collingwood as well. To finish his England days, rather than just putting his feet up and milking it through a few years of county cricket, he's come back, captained this side, and then you've got the bowling attack, which Onions obviously leads from the front, and then you've got Chris Rushworth, who over the last couple of years has sort of come from nowhere. Rushworth and Onions, the most formidable opening partnership in county cricket.
Why the cheer on Rushworth there, Phil?
Well, because nobody ever talks about him, do they?
Well, we're going to.
Yeah, quite right too. He's bald, emphatically northern, very unfashionable, and a bloody good bowler. And it's great to see.
What a summation of his life. He should have that on his grave.
On his grave. And his Twitter, who am I?
He's done well. On Borthwick, let's stat it up. 1,121 runs. All right, plus 34 wickets at 33.
Yeah.
What a player. Is he your county cricket MVP, despite the announcements?
Well, as I said on this show a few weeks ago, he is my favourite cricketer in county cricket.
I think that's his gravestone sorted. My favourite cricketer.
Yeah.
Phil Walker says.
It's all out cricket. Yeah, he's done really well. Borthwick got 1,121. Here's a player I don't know much about. Stoneman.
Yeah.
1,068 runs.
Great season.
Really, really good player.
He's had a great year in... last year was fantastic in one-day cricket. He's had a funny career because he's been talked up ever since he came through the youth system there. Had a series of not very good years and they've really stuck by him. I think a lot of counties wouldn't have shown the same patience, so Durham deserve a fair amount of credit for that. And then he one-day cricket last year, it all came right for him and he's taken that into the four-day stuff. They obviously like him a lot in that he's now captaining the one-day side as well in Collingwood's absence. And from the bits I've seen of him one-day cricket, he plays his shots, he comes out fighting, and I think he's done the same in four-day cricket. Perhaps that's what he needed to do.
He's got all the shots, and I interviewed Collingwood in the middle of the season, and he said he's an England player. He said he's an international player. And also Fred said that, weirdly enough, about 3 or 4 years ago when I asked him about good young players that he'd seen in county cricket. And he mentioned Stoneman straight away. He'd bowled to him once in a Lancashire-Durham game and Stoneman had taken him apart. So he's always had a lot of ability. It's just now kicking in.
But it's an interesting, wasn't it? When you do give youth a chance and you put a bit of faith in someone that it does come off, and there are other counties out there perhaps haven't had such a good season.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think I see them looming over the horizon. The sun is setting right now over the Oval, and I don't think we can avoid talking about Surrey for much longer. It would be unfair, I think, on Northants, who deserve priority in this discussion, for an outstanding achievement down there in the second division.
Agreed.
Lancashire, Northants pretty close to Essex in the end. Bit surprised by Essex. I thought they were down and out. They came within a whisker, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, what a weird season that they had. They're all out for 20. Mutiny in the ranks. Grayson on the edge of either walking or being pushed. Kind of releasing all kinds of public statements throughout May about how ashamed he is of the team's performances. And yet they were only a four-day win away from actually going up.
Yeah.
And of course, they were only a few hits away as well from winning the 2020 finals date. Of course, Northants won that and nobody expected them to win that. That was an incredible achievement. We've discussed David Willey's freakish performance that night before. But for them to go up and back up that win with a promotion and to be up there for the first time in 9 years and also to cap it, different class, with an open-top bus parade through the city of Northampton on Friday afternoon.
Fantastic.
Wonderful scenes. I went up there. Oh, of course, yeah. Hanging out the windows and all kinds. I went up there the week before they actually got the win, got the promotion, and spoke to the CEO there and the coach and Stephen Peters, the captain, and various other players as well, and put it together for the upcoming magazine. And it really is a great story for county cricket because they don't have much money, as everybody knows. They have a small but dedicated following, and they had such a shocker in 2012. They played 38 matches and won 4 of them.
Wow.
And now there is a stat.
That is a stat.
And so for them to turn it around and for them to kind of enjoy this resurgence, not just within the club, but within the community as well, is a lovely story. And anybody who kind of wonders about county cricket's place in the world and, you know, tends to jump at the next obituary of the game, you just got to go there, really. And it was really striking.
It touches on another player who I think had an absolutely fantastic season. And like Keaton Jennings, he sounds a little like a 1920s blues man, Trent Copeland. Love him. Oh, Trent Copeland.
Well,
used to play the blues with Trent Copeland back in 23.
Thanks for that, Ross. Just quickly moving up from Northamptonshire to Lancashire, who I think it feels a little bit like Man United are getting promoted back up where they belong. But there's a little bit of skullduggery going on in the wicket-keeping department over there in Lancashire because they've just signed Joss Butler. Mm-hmm. Joe, your reaction to that signing?
Oh, it's a fantastic signing from them. They released Gareth Cross, and though he's been there for a long time, but has never been prolific run scorer. He's
409 runs at 24 this year.
Well, there you go. So it's okay. It's not great, and he's been doing that kind of thing for a few years.
Yeah.
So Butler was available. It was a no-brainer. They've also got a youngster, Alex Davis, there, who I haven't seen anything of, but played for England under-19s, and is meant to be pretty handy.
Alex Davis this year, 58 runs in 3 innings at 29, but he only got a couple of run-outs. Butler, 508 runs at 36.28 in first-class cricket. He's a great one-day player, but I just wanted to focus
on first-class cricket. Yeah, he fell away a little bit. He made a brilliant 100 on TV. They showed a game around June, July time against Lancashire.
Oh, so was the Somerset Warwickshire right the start of the year when he got...
Warwickshire, that's right. And he came in a good situation. I think they were 300 for five or so, but he played a brilliant, brilliant 100. But then after that, he hasn't really chipped in that much.
At the sake of sounding contrarian, my concern about signing Josh Butler is he's going to be off playing for England, isn't he? Or is Alex Davies that good?
They obviously think a lot of Davies to give, because they know Butler is ODI and 2020 keeper for the foreseeable future now. I think he's done enough with the bat and he's improved enough with the gloves to warrant that. So, in a way, it's good. I mean, it's obviously sad that Cross has had to move on. He's had a long career. But if you're giving Butler a chance to keep wicket and you've got a youngster in the wings to come in and keep wicket when Butler's not there, I think it works out well for everyone.
And that's the key. Mentioning Bairstow earlier and the gloves, you know, how significant they are for him because he sees that as his advancement of his career. Same thing applies to Butler, you know. Yeah, and also to Kiesewetter as well, which is kind of why Butler had to move, that they couldn't guarantee Butler the gloves. All three of them see themselves potentially as test match keeper batsmen when Pryor jacks it in.
Well, look at us all talking about wicket keeping, a subject none of us, unless I'm about to be corrected and Joe's a lifelong wicket keeper, should know anything about. And so I think it's definitely time to get cricket specific wicket keeping. I'm not sure that sound effect means anything. Maybe it just reflects the ignorance of the panel when it comes to wicketkeeping. But we've got a little match-ups for you, if you will. And the first match-up is down in Hampshire, and we haven't turned to them, and it's the Bates-Wheater match-up. Ross, your impression of that?
Well, the story so far on this one, Al, what you're alluding to, is Bates is a fantastic gloveman, but not so much of a batsman. Wheater vice versa. So who won this season, Al?
Well, it was... something that the purists may not enjoy too much, because exactly as they foretold, so it was. Bates got an average of 29 and Wheater an average of 42. So they brought in Wheater for his batting, and guess what? That's exactly what he did.
Although that is only half the argument. We don't know how many catches Wheater put down.
Yeah, have you got that stat?
How does one statistically deal with catches put down?
That it should be the keeper's catches.
Opta will have these details.
But let's Opta it. All right, tell me about Opta.
It should be a new stat, because Haddon, who did keep very well in the Ashes, got lauded for... He did break the record in the Ashes series, which was good. Well done, Brad.
Why not?
Some good catches in there, but... Without the drop catches alongside it, it should really be a percentage, shouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it should be. A keeper's taken 95% of catches in the series, therefore is a good keeper.
Let's celebrate the stat.
If we'd really done our research here, lads, then we would have the information.
That's right. This is the danger with statistics, and I'm going to come back maybe to the first statistic we talked about at the beginning, the Simon Wild statistic, just to debunk it further. Talking of
leave Wild alone.
Stephen Davies has scored 867 runs in a losing course for Surrey this year at 45.63, including two centuries. He's a hell of a wicket keeper. Okay, when he was picked for England in 2010, he'd scored over 1,000 runs at 57, but he's almost back to his best. A little bit of a dip last year. What do we think of Stephen Davies' chance of forcing him way back into the England setup?
Tricky, you can't play them all. He's a brilliant, natural cricketer. Beautiful to watch.
Good keeper?
Apparently, not that I've seen too much from this year, but his keeping gets better and better. If you talk to Mark Church, who does the commentary for the BBC on behalf of Surrey, he says that his keeping gets better and better. I haven't seen too much, so I can't really comment, but he's a great cricketer to watch, but you can't pick them all.
Well, just like we said, that once you looked at the stats in Bates and Wheater, you suddenly realised there wasn't a story. I was determined to find statistics to demonstrate that Stephen Davies has done better since he announced he was gay, and yet England have ignored him. But the fact of the matter is, the statistics don't back that up. He announced he was gay on the 27th of February 2011. His statistics in 2010 were excellent. They dipped in 2011. They got a little better in 2012. And so my allegation of homophobia against the entire England setup.
If anything, it just reinforces what a progressive society we live in.
Yeah, exactly. That's a happy story. You were digging for
dirt. What a wonderful way to end this session. And finally, just while we're talking matchups and particularly overseas players, two major letdowns. Samer Awira and Chanderpaul, I thought. I look up their stats, both scored over 700 runs at about 40.
Yeah.
So
it's pretty average,
fine, isn't it?
If you're looking for excellence, you won't quite find it there.
Maybe it's not as bad.
Not that bad.
So that's three non-stories.
Oh, well done.
It's the danger of stats, Ross.
Listen. Do you know what I like after a good stat? Some more stats. Joe's going to talk us through Opta's Team of the Year stats.
Yeah, we got the chaps at Opta to pick their 11 of the year based on the stats beneath the stats. So these aren't your mere batting averages, your bowling average. These are stats you've never even heard of. So, okay.
Wow.
So, who would you say out of county cricket had the best percentage of good connection shots that he scored his runs from?
Oh, I love it. Robson.
Robson was close.
Yes.
Close.
Root. Stoneman.
No. Simon Cattich would be the answer. Somewhat surprisingly, 97% of his shots were scored from good connections.
Oh, fantastic.
Okay, if you want a good connection, go Cattich. Yep.
All right. Which pace bowler forced the highest proportion of false shots this year?
All ranking.
Rushworth. Onions. Borthwick.
Swan.
No. Sussex.
McGoffin.
No.
Jordan.
Yes.
Yes! And that's your stats. That's your pod blast. And do remember, there's a fantastic guide to spin bowling with Graham Swan this month in the All Out Cricket magazine.